everybody. Well, yeah, I'm going to start with agenda paper 6 that refers to the revenue-based depreciation method. It's a topic that we have been discussing in the past, as you can remember. So at the November 2011 meeting, a majority of you committee members noted that an amortization or depreciation method based on expected revenues was not consistent with the current guidance in IAS 16 and IAS 38, which state that the depreciation amortization method should reflect the pattern of consumption of the expected future economic benefits. So they directed, you directed the staff to propose an annual improvement to clarify this. So the purpose of this meeting is to discuss a proposed amendment to IAS 38 and IAS 16, and this amendment will prohibit the use of this methodology. In our paper, we analyzed the nature of a revenue-based approach because we had not discussed that at previous meetings. And we determined, based on the current guidance for the selection of depreciation and amortization methods in IAS 16 and IAS 38, that this methodology is not permitted. And the reasons are, as we have pointed out in paragraph 39 of this agenda paper, that a revenue-based approach might not reflect a systematic allocation of the cost of a tangible or an intangible asset. It is inconsistent with the pattern of consumption of an asset because variations in the productivity for a particular asset might not necessarily coincide with the way in which an asset is being used up, and this methodology is neither based on a period nor on a number of units. So in our paper, we also considered relevant to point out that in the entertainment industry, a revenue-based approach is commonly used in practice, at least when we were writing this paper, we knew that for the U.S., but now we understand that it's also common practice under IFRSs. Consequently, we would like the committee members to be aware of this practice when making a decision about the need for an amendment to IAS 38 and IAS 16. So our proposed amendments are in appendices A and B of this paper. So I would like to ask the questions whether you agree with the staff recommendation to amend paragraphs in IAS 16 and IAS 38, and do you have any comments on the proposed changes, basis for conclusions, etc.
One observation before we open it for comments. We have had a number of interactions with concessionaires in one jurisdiction where this has been prominent practice. My personal view is that their approach is not based at all on any notion of consumption. It's based on the objective of maximizing earnings now and having higher expenses come later. That is the clear objective. The estimates are significantly influenced by inflation. So they do result in a significant back-ending of depreciation expense. Not consumption, but revenue.
Okay.
And so some of our discussions last time about, well, wasn't revenue maybe a surrogate for something else, and couldn't, I know Laurence brought up several points about this. At least the folks that we have interacted with, that's not the case. The objective seems clearly to, as I say, back end the depreciation charge. Personal view, let's start with Bernd and then work our way around the room.
Well, because you want to be finished by within 30 minutes. I fully agree with both recommendations or both questions. I think it's a good paper. I like the paper, although I think you could have stopped by paragraph 5 where it says the committee already agreed upon that it's not allowed. But I like that you incorporated some accounting theory in there, although I learned from Sarah that it's obviously the most recent accounting theory that you have in the U.S. literature. No, I agree, and I think, and I also agree with the amendments. So.
Ruth?
Yeah, same as Bernd, but I'm puzzled as to why it's come back to us, because I thought we agreed on this and that we were going to recommend an annual improvement to the board. So I agree. I think it's a good paper. I think it's very well explained, and I agree with the proposed amendment. So my question is, why is it back on the table? Are we being asked to reconsider what we agreed before? Is that why it's back? Is that what you want us to do? Or I'm trying to see the reason for why it's back on the table.
No, well, the intention was not really to reconsider, but because I listened to the playback at the past meeting, I thought that there were some questions that would need to be clarified with the paper, even though it was clear to me that a majority of the committee members agreed on a proposed amendment. It was just my intention to clarify some things that were asked.
Loose ends.
Exactly.
Okay, but because if that is the case, that's fine. I just thought there might be something else we need to know about. No? Okay.
Cass?
Yeah. Thank you. I think I was a minority, because I was not aware that the service concession was that kind of intention. But I thought it's not just a free choice, but based on the fact patterns to make a judgment to that revenue based. So I thought it may be some option to allow that revenue base, as long as that reflects the fact pattern. Whether consumption or generation is another issue, but I thought that is one possibility. So if, but that is the case, and then I understand that artificially backload the depreciation, and I understand the intention to prohibit that methodology. I can understand that. But I have a problem with the wording or this agenda paper, because I want to make sure, for example, that the production or manufacturing company produce some electronic devices, which maybe the production pattern will be maybe relatively flat after a certain period of learning curve or lower yield. So production is flat, but the price goes down, so company expect the market price goes down over a year. So in that case, I think currently most of the companies, such company, will make a judgment to adopt that diminishing balance methodology, reflecting that fact pattern. I think that price reduction reflects that technology or commercial obsolescence. So I think that is reflecting that fact, and the pricing is one of the factors to make a judgment. So I just want to make sure to avoid to mislead the leaders to this is just a prohibiting that revenue based, so-called revenue based depreciation, but not to avoid, not to prohibit the factor to determine the depreciation method.
I think my understanding, Kaz, is that in Japan, the use of declining balance depreciation is more significant than other jurisdictions. And the situation that Kaz is describing, as I understand it, would be typical, for example, of a chip manufacturer, in which, even though the production might be relatively flat, the technological obsolescence and competition is going to drive the price down, which would suggest to some that the economic benefits are being consumed in the early periods. And one of the indicators that you would lead you to that judgment is technological obsolescence as manifested in a declining revenue base or per unit revenue. And it seems to me that that's a different sort of an argument than just basing the depreciation on this year's revenue divided by remaining revenue or something like that. So, Joanna?
I will be consistent and say, as I did last time, I think I actually voted against it. I can't remember if we had a vote or not. So I do disagree with this. I believe that 62, like your example of saying that people aren't, you know, they're purely doing it for revenue or to get the most profit this year or whatever, means they're not following 62. I don't believe that we should be writing stuff to correct errors of application of a standard. However, I've lost that one. But having said that, so I just wanted to get that on the table because I disagree with it. But in BC1 then, why are we saying the very last bit, we actually say the board noted the revenue-based approach results, which might not necessarily coincide. And then the very last bit, the board also noted that a revenue-based approach might not be considered a systematic approach. That implies that in some circumstances it would.
Point
so
taken.
How can we say that in the basis of conclusions when in 62A we are absolutely prohibiting it? So it's completely inconsistent, and I agree that it might not. But it does not go with 62A, which prohibits it. So we've got something wrong somewhere.
So we delete might.
Well, that, yes, from the view of where everyone else is sitting, absolutely. Yes. I mean, that's the only conclusion you can draw, that it does not, because otherwise you couldn't have 62A.
Guido, I skipped you on the way around, so let me come back.
Another way to do it is not to prohibit all revenue-based method depreciation. Because there might be circumstances, that's my understanding also from the example that you just brought up, Wayne, is that there might be circumstances where, well, let's say it's not based on the revenues, it's the consumption of the future economic benefits is actually shown by a revenue-based method. So what makes me think about it is the issue that some industries, well, let me ask the question. In 35 and 36 of the staff paper, we say that under US GAAP for the entertainment industry, it's not prohibited to do it, even though it's an intangible asset. So not only if it's seen as inventory, but even if it's an intangible asset, they would still say that it could be based on revenues. Is that
my understanding is that there is no agreement on whether it would be an intangible or inventory.
Okay, so that could mean that if, and that's not the question that we need to answer here, but that would mean that in the future, if people say, well, 38 and 16, it says you cannot use it, so why not make it inventory, then we can come up with the same conclusion, which would probably not be the solution that we would like to have. And I understand that we are not discussing this intangible inventory issue here, but I had the same concerns as Joanna, because also in our paper, in paragraph 39, we say some price changes, such as inflation, have no bearing, some of them, but others may have. But then we can say, but no revenue-based is allowed. So that makes me, either we say all revenue-based.
Well, I think the intention was to say all revenue-based. I agree with Joanna's point that the last part of her conclusion with that might is not correct. We should say it's not systematic, or probably we should just erase the whole sentence and do not say anything about it. But the intention was to prove that at least under the current guidance, C916 and 38, revenue-based methodologies are not allowed. Because of the reasons that we discuss in the paper.
I guess the problem that everybody has out there, and maybe also this committee, is what is the consumption of future economic benefits? And that And as long as we don't clarify that, I have a problem with introducing paragraph 62A that strictly prohibits. Right.
Patricia?
What I thought Denise meant by might not be considered a systematic method was that it may coincidentally reflect the consumption pattern of the underlying asset, but it's only coincident that it reflects that pattern. It's not because the asset is directly being consumed in that way, but coincidentally, it's the same pattern as it is being consumed. And you can't use it just because it's coincidental that it produces the same result as you would get using.
Although that's a subtlety that isn't obvious.
But it doesn't produce the same result, then you can use it because it's not material.
Andrew?
Well, similar comments to others, actually. If we're going for absolute prohibition, what does that mean for example, those broadcasters who currently front-load revenue-based amortization? Does that mean they're going to default to straight line and deal with the front-loading through an impairment charge because their cash flows later down the track are going to be less?
Yes.
Is that what this means?
Or they could use declining balance.
Or they could also look at residual value. And if they say at the end of the first year, my residual value has fallen significantly, then you're effectively dealing with it that way.
Right. I think there are lots of ways that you can achieve the objective that you're describing.
Okay. And there is one other. You mentioned service concessions, and I think there is one example in IFRIC 12 where the concession ends after a fixed amount of money has been earned or a specified return has been earned. So, you know, what do we do there? So, I'm not sure an absolute prohibition is. It seems to me that in that case, if you know, there are some arguments for a revenue-based amortization model, if you're asset ends when you've reached a certain return.
The other thing is that they will not view it anymore as an intangible, and they would just classify it as an inventory.
Well, no, I think IFRIC 12 tells you. IFRIC 12 tells you to call it an intangible.
No, well, I was referring to the other case.
Laurence.
Yeah, I'm in the camps of those who disagree with the proposed amendment, and particularly as a description of what is a revenue-based depreciation method as one that is derived from the interaction between quantity and price. I had not thought of revenue-based depreciation method just being that. And I wonder, how does the proposed modification interact with that paragraph 90 of IS 38, particularly 90B, that refers that says many factors are considered in determining useful life of an intangible asset, typical product life cycle for the assets, and so on. So we know that for depreciation methods for intangible assets with that reference for typical product life cycle of an asset, you can follow that pattern. And in many cases, how that pattern is determined other than P times Q, and how you assess sometimes the price changes affect the Q and the curve of the product life cycle. So I'm really concerned that this is going too much to try to solve an issue in a single jurisdiction, because I've not heard it in many cases. Just because of inflation, I agree that inflation should not be the factor to follow for recognizing amortization in that case. But I think this is not appropriate revenue-based. Things that take into account some curves that reflect the consumption of the economic benefits embodied in the assets as a systematic way of allocating the costs of the asset, to me, is an appropriate basis for depreciation amortization. So I think we should not we should not get wrong with what we are trying to prohibit. If it is inflation, let's just be clear that just adjustment to inflation is not an appropriate way for debasing depreciation.
Boy, Guo, and then Bernd. Oh, Sarah, excuse me. I get... Okay, sorry, Sarah, I didn't mean to miss you there.
That's okay. I can stand. I'm just a community meeting, so... But I have similar concern how far we should go. This is an issue which someone used not correctly, the methodology defined in the standards. But if we go too far, as I understand, you know, quite often the case, you know, people use revenue-based depreciation method by some way because, you know, usage defined by quantity of something in simple case is okay, but you know, if you have different kind of the usage, you have to find some monetary amount.
No.
Yeah. And we can discuss later on, you see. And so my primary view is, should we go too far? And secondly, frankly speaking, you know, we have to think about the relationship between the board debate over the leasing and those favor interest-based amortization person, that those will say, you know, such methodology also in line with the amortization or depreciation method in PPE and intangibles. They will interpret the amortization and depreciation method differently. They all say, they will say that they, in line with systematic rational basis. So I have some concern, you know, the relationship, not indirectly.
If I may respond, if you told me I wanted to use a present value base, so that one currency unit of revenue 30 years from now is assigned a much smaller amount today, then I could understand that. The problem is that a pure revenue base makes no discrimination between a currency unit of revenue 30 years from now and a currency of unit of revenue tomorrow. It treats them as if they were the same. So if you wanted to argue that we ought to have present value base, we'd have to amend 38 because it prohibits it. But I think that's the distinction I would draw in this. But I think we've got several people, Bernd, Ruth, Charlotte, Fei Long, and Joanna again.
Sarah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Okay. Go for it.
You know, I actually got pretty comfortable with 62A, and here was why. The staff had to go back to the subsequent book from Peyton and Littleton, Peyton's book, 1943, to actually come up with a theory that even talked about revenue-based depreciation methods. Then in order to find an intermediate accounting textbook that discussed it, we went all the way up to 1946. So I thought, you know, this has fallen out of theory, meaning it's probably not consistent with our conceptual framework. And that's really what we wanted to do, is say, hey, these methods are not consistent with the conceptual framework. Well, goodness sakes, we had to go back 80 years to find something that even wrote about them. So I was pretty comfortable with 62A and saying, don't do this. This doesn't fit anymore. We're not doing matching anymore. We're not doing conservatism. That's it.
Now, Bert.
Well, I agree with what Sarah said, and I wouldn't die in a ditch for 62A because I think it flows obviously from the rest of the text. So if we think we don't need to amend the text and come to the same conclusion. Although I don't see a case where it really fits to do revenue-based depreciation. Because when I come back to Laurence's example, it's P times Q. It's the Q that matters. It's not the P. And if the P goes down, the Q stays the same. And that's why my machinery or whatever, that it wears off. So I don't see an example where the P influences the Q. If it influences the Q because I produce less, of course that's a different case. But if the Q stays the same, then the machinery wears off the same, no matter what the P does. So I don't see the only thing that I would think of, and that comes back to what Tricia said, is maybe it's a proxy for, the revenues are a proxy for the Q. For example, if I don't know how many cars drive on the road because I don't want to put someone there and count them, I take all the revenues divided of through how many one car has to pay, and then I come up with the number of cars. But I don't think that that's the revenue based thing that we are talking about, because I still can determine the Q by dividing it through the fee, so it's not the revenue proxy we're talking about, is it?
No.
No. Okay.
Ruth?
I'm quite concerned, actually. I wouldn't die in a ditch over anything to do with accounting, but I really would, because they're bigger things in life. But 62A, I think, is very important. And the reason I think it's important is that accounting theory point that Sarah and Bernd brought out. In my experience in teaching accounting, people don't understand what depreciation is. Mm-hmm. They think it's a means of valuing an asset.
Exactly.
They don't understand that it's the allocation of the cost of an asset, which is what's written into the standard. And so they think that using revenue is fine because what we're doing is valuing the asset by depreciating it. And it helps us to get it to the right value. And you know, you might be surprised to hear that, but that's what a lot of students do think. And maybe that's where the revenue-based depreciation came from, I'm not sure. But to me, the theory is quite clear. We're allocating the cost of the asset, so it must be the consumption of the benefits of the asset. We're not talking about the productivity of the asset. So I think we should keep 62A, whatever tweaking we need to say, in some cases, revenue might be a proxy for a unit basis, but I just don't see how we can accept it under our accounting framework. And in fact, this accounting framework's not that new. IAS 16 is not so young.
Well, it's newer than 1943.
Yeah, it is newer than that.
Had a comment.
Go ahead.
But just quickly to point out that indirectly, so my references to these old books, which I consider very valuable, by the way, we highlighted indirectly that this has been an issue for more than 60 years.
Yeah.
I mean, the use of, and the questions about the use of these methodologies, the questions have been there for a long time.
Although we do need to recognize that depreciation in U.S. GAAP is much more of a policy choice than an estimate.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's a fundamentally different framework for thinking about depreciation than IAS 16. Charlotte?
I think my concern is that people would read this as actually stopping you using your revenue as a proxy. And it reads that you can see someone go, well, it says you can't use revenue, you're trying to use revenue. When I can see an example where I'm not able to actually properly get Q. I know that Q is a combination, for example, of cars and lorries. Lorries use roughly twice as much of the road as the car. And I don't want to have to go down and work out how many cars I've had, how many lorries I've had, and my revenue is a good number for that. And I want to be able to use that. And I agree that in most circumstances, revenue doesn't tell you consumption. But in some situations, it may be a proxy. I just want to make sure that this doesn't get rid of that, which I think...
Yeah, it gets
rid of that. If we got rid of might, if we got rid of the might from the 21, from BC1, I think maybe that would be a problem. I think it just needs to be stated you can use it as a proxy somewhere.
That's not the intention.
Phelan?
The letter of possible, if 62A in oil and gas industry, even in mining industry, we also use the UOP method. But the UOP method in that industry is something to do with revenue-based method, because we use the reserve, recovery reserve, when we use the UOP. How the recovery reserve come out is kind of break even for the cost, and the value of the reserve. So in these circumstances, actually we also use the estimation of price and quantities as well. So if I'm puzzled, is that the unit of production method is a revenue based method?
No, I think what you're saying is that there's an economic limit on the determination of recoverable reserves, and that economic limit obviously is different based on the price of crude. To me, that's another example of the revenue being a factor in the application of a method that is not revenue based.
It's not revenue based.
So it's, in that case, it's a factor in determining what the denominator is, which is proved recoverable reserves, as opposed to then saying, and I'm going to assume this or that about the revenues that will be produced. So I see it as a substantive difference, but maybe that's all a subtlety that we need to better describe in the basis. I think that's maybe getting back to Pat's comment about the might being way too subtle for some of this. Just keep going around. Guido?
I wanted to say that everybody who says that this P times Q, we should only look at the Q, always takes as an example machinery, PP&E. But that's not the issue here. The issue is an intangible. When it comes to in IFRIC 12, I can understand that if you look at it as a piece of machinery that you're saying, you know, what is the output? What is the output? How many quantities can be produced by this machine? And I understand that people say, well, it doesn't matter about the P, it matters about the Q. But how would you define that? What is the output of a license to, I don't know, use film or movie or something in a certain jurisdiction? What is the output? I don't see the output in an intangible. So and the problem for me is, I would come back to that, why we have one issue here, which is inflation-based accounting, maybe. Why do we deal with it by introducing something specific for revenue-based method? I think the issue here is that people have a problem with the notion of what is the consumption of future economic benefits, especially for an intangible. And people can say my future economic benefits are the cash inflows that I'm getting from an asset, whatever the asset is, the intangible or a tangible asset. And if that's not the case, if that's not the meaning, then we should say that. But that's the definition of future economic benefits.
But there is...
Go ahead.
The reality is that you've got the same identical guidance for intangibles and for property, plant, and equipment. Both the guidance is both based on the consumption. So that's another discussion, whether intangibles should have another type of guidance.
Because people are, you know, again, if it's PP&E, it's easy to say, well, you know, what is the quantity that can be produced? What's the output? But what is the output for an intangible? I don't know.
That's why, to me, this proposed amendment is a clarification to the existing guidance. Otherwise, if we want to change it, then we are talking about some other.
But I can understand that the output is the basis for economic benefits for machinery.
Okay.
Even though I have to say, if it's allocation of cost, if I'm producing machinery,
the price at which I can sell it to somebody else heavily depends on what this person can get out of the products that can be produced by this machinery. So also in this case, you know, allocating the cost of a machinery, the acquisition cost, also the price of the products that can be produced with this machinery come into play. I'm not saying that that's the right answer. I'm just saying that I think we should concentrate on the definition here. And maybe we come up with different definitions, which I don't think is the right answer, but for intangibles and tangibles.
We are all, me included, rehearsing over arguments that we've made in the past. So I'd like to bring this around fairly quickly. Joanna, Laurence, Scott, and then we'll end it.
I have a suggestion that I think might solve a number of the people's concerns around this. And that's in paragraph 62A, rather than say a revenue-based method, blah, 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 is to actually just turn it around to say a method that reflects a pattern of generation of the expected future economic benefits embedded in the assets rather than a pattern of consumption of those benefits is not acceptable because it results in a depreciation charge that does not reflect many revenue-based methods are therefore not acceptable. So to turn it around completely to actually say what the issue is, which is the pattern of generation in the benefit as opposed to the consumption. So we're actually dealing with the issue as opposed to trying to define what a revenue-based method is.
Good point. Good point. I see a lot of people nodding yes around the table here. It only took us a half an hour or 40 minutes to get there. Laurence?
Yeah, it happens that I was the IACTAC person who wrote ICTA and ICTC. So I do know the interaction. I'm not completely in agreement with Guido about what was what we tried to achieve at the time, that is to reflect the consumption of the cash flows embodied in the assets at the time. You know that it was intangible assets, and I agree with Guido that the issue is mainly for intangible assets. I wanted to put in front of the committee an example.
That I understand what you understand as being revenue-based method, or perhaps because I don't capture what is, or I don't have the same understanding as you about what is what you describe as a revenue-based method and this connection to the interaction between price and quantity. If you have an intangible asset, say in a concession arrangement, where you are locked in, the grantor tells you, for the first 10 years of the concession, I don't want you to have a very high price on your toll. And so you're going to be limited in the amount of revenue you can collect. But after 10 years, for the next 20 years, you can jump and you will be able to set the price that high. How are you going to determine the depreciation, the amortization pattern in that case, knowing that the price has been effectively limited for the first 10 years and has been effectively much higher at the next 10 years. Are you just going to look at the traffic on the road? I don't think that this would represent the proper pattern of consumption of the economic benefits embodied in the license. Because the price for the license encompasses the fact that for the first 10 years the price has been limited and that for the next 10 years the price is much higher. So it's not just a question of how much flows of traffic you have on that road, that would be a proper reflection of the consumption of the economic benefits into the license.
As I say, and I apologize to the committee if I've gotten too personally invested in this one. I think we are rehearsing over arguments that we had the last time this came up. Let me ask the question that I asked before. Given Joanna's clarification, which I saw a lot of head nodding that seemed to sense agreement, given Joanna's clarification to the language, who would object to this going forward as an improvement?
I'd like to see it.
Before we vote.
Okay.
So just to be clear, was Joanna's
did your clarification end in the words many?
Well, the last sentence, I think, in terms of my, the key was to get the first sentence,
yeah.
which is that a method that reflects a pattern of generation of the expected future, blah, 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 is not acceptable because it results in a depreciation charge that does not reflect the way in which the asset is being used up. I personally would stop there and would not say anything about revenue-based, but I think that the majority of the committee would probably then want another sentence that says something to the effect of a majority of revenue-based.
I think we could just say this would often mean that a revenue.
Yes, yeah. Yes, something like that as the following sentence, but the key being the first sentence that if it's the other way around, it just doesn't work. You can't do it.
My concern is that doesn't really help. I don't think that solves any of the problems out there, because people would then ask, okay, what is generation of future economic benefits? So I'm just saying that's why I would dissent, because I think it doesn't really.
Okay, but again, we're rehearsing again. And
I've been wanting to say something very much like Joanna said. I think the problem with the revenue-based method is that it is based on generation of economic benefits from operating the business that this asset is part of. And that's not what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be reflecting consumption of the benefits of the asset, not generation of benefits from operating a business. So, for example, if my asset is, well, let's say a television show, and I think about the consumption of the benefits of having the rights to that television show, well, if I happen to pay a whole lot of money for a distribution agreement that allows me to show it in an additional 40% of the world, because now I have an outlet there, well, all of a sudden my expected revenue has gone up. It has nothing to do with the benefits of the television, owning the television show, and everything to do with this other asset. That's why I think revenue methods are a problem, because they focus on generation of benefits of from operating a business instead of consumption of the asset. And I think Joanna's hit it right on as to how to say it. We can talk about it more like that in the basis if we think people will have problems understanding.
Okay, I'm going to call the question. Based on Joanna's restructuring, who would object to this going out as an annual, going to the board as an annual improvement? Two objections.
Three
objections. Okay, it goes to the board. And with any luck, you'll never see it again until it comes back as post-exposure draft. Is that a promise, Denise?
Yes.
A
lot of luck. Not just any luck.
Yes, Cass has a question.
The BC we're talking about, that the BC awarding, that the pricing is not is part of the pattern or factor of determining.
Well, I'd love to see us go back to the tape or the digital master and pick up Scott's wording, because I think he captured it as well as anybody around the table has, including me, better than I have.
And so, I won't be able to repeat it, so you better have that tape.
I'll make some notes.
but I